Welcome to the Connecticut Freedom Trail. This tour takes you to southwestern Connecticut, where we explore sites in New Haven, Guilford, Milford, Trumbull, and Bridgeport. Specific directions to each Freedom Trail site and suggestions on how to get the most out of this auto tour tape series are in the companion booklet. At the end of each site description on this tape, you will hear this tone.
For 350 years, in the big cities and small towns of Connecticut, there has been a little-known struggle for freedom and equality. From the founding of the Connecticut colony, people of African descent faced slavery and racial discrimination. But from the earliest days, some Connecticut residents, both people of color and white people, have fought against racial prejudice and oppression. The Connecticut Freedom Trail commemorates their struggle. These are the stories of New Haven residents' struggle to free the African captives of the Amistad ship, the local Underground Railroad, the progress of Dixwell Congregational, Varick AME Zion, and Walters AME Zion, three of the state's oldest black churches. African American patriots who fought in the Revolutionary War claim a place in the history of Trumbull and Milford as well. The Reverend John Davenport brought colonists to New Haven in 1638. They purchased land from Native American Indian tribes and originally called the area Quinnipiac. As the area grew, residents realized it would not be an agricultural center and began to utilize the region's potential as a trade and transportation hub. The first references to Africans employed in New Haven Colony are in 1644. Shipping and related enterprises in the area meant that prominent families had money to buy servants, and enslaved African Americans played important roles in running the home, maintaining trade, and earning income for their masters as rented artisans. The presence of Yale University, a merchant elite, and after the Revolution, Eli Whitney's gun factory pushed New Haven into the next century as a manufacturing center. Though freedom gradually greeted New Haven's black population, blacks were not welcomed to the new manufacturing jobs. Many continued in personal service, now being paid for the work they had been forced to do as slaves. Throughout the 19th century, New Haven residents tried to balance its industrial, civic, and cultural base with the new immigrants who helped build and strengthen the city with their own traditions. African American residents of the Elm City faced similar obstacles even earlier in their attempts to build and maintain community. The Freedom Trail celebrates that legacy.
The first site on the southwestern section of the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Amistad Memorial in New Haven.
In 1839, a trial with international implications would test the strength of New Haven's abolitionist community in their effort to educate local citizens on the injustice of slavery. Abolitionist leader Simeon Jocelyn, along with local clergy, congregations, Yale faculty, students, and concerned residents, joined the campaign to free the Amistad captives. That summer, a United States Navy ship captured a suspicious schooner, the Amistad, sailing near Long Island. Ruiz and Montez were returning to the Ruiz plantation in another part of Cuba with 53 Africans bought in Havana. Several days into the journey, Joseph Cinque organized a rebellion, killed most of the crew, and forced Ruiz and Montez to sail them back to Africa. At night, the Spaniards secretly sailed up the coast of North America and finally into Long Island Sound. The Africans, charged with mutiny and murder, were held in the New Haven jail. Soon, abolitionists throughout the state formed the Amistad Committee and began their efforts to defend the captives. Although the mutiny and murder charges were eventually dismissed, Ruiz and Montez believed they owned the captives and demanded their return. Josiah Gibbs, a Yale language teacher, found an African sailor who understood the language of the Mende. James Covey translated the story of the captives who were Mende, taken from an area of Africa we know as Sierra Leone, and brought to Cuba. There they had been sold to Ruiz and Montez. New Haven lawyer Roger Sherman Baldwin argued the case before United States District Court Judge Andrew Judson, who ruled that the Africans were neither slaves nor Spanish subjects and should be freed. The United States government took the case to the Supreme Court. Simeon Jocelyn, Reverend Leonard Bacon of Center Church, and other abolitionists began a campaign to gain the Amistad captives' freedom. They convinced former President John Quincy Adams to argue the case before the Supreme Court, where the Africans were finally vindicated and could begin to prepare for the journey home. The Mende stayed in Farmington while they worked with the committee to raise money to hire a ship home to Africa. The Amistad Memorial at 165 Church Street stands on a small plaza alongside New Haven's restored City Hall. Ed Hamilton designed the memorial, which is on the site of the jail which held the Amistad captives. The 14-foot bronze monument features episodes of the Amistad history on its three sides. Its dedication in 1992 commemorated both the Amistad history and the efforts of the contemporary Amistad Committee to preserve and promote Connecticut's African-American historical legacy. Details of the top panel are best seen from above inside City Hall.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Center Church in New Haven.
Colonists founded Center Church in 1639, and the church structure, built between 1812 and 1814, houses a colonial-era crypt in the basement. Community leaders used the upper green around the church as New Haven's first cemetery. In 1826, the church's new pastor, Reverend Leonard Bacon, met with four other young men to form a society they hoped would create interest in anti-slavery issues and civil rights among Connecticut's whites and in seminaries throughout the country. Bacon's early commitment helped the congregation become an important base of support for the Amistad case. The church is now a national historic landmark.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is United Church on the Green in New Haven. Please see the companion booklet for information about this particular site. The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Yale University Divinity School's Battelle Chapel in New Haven.
Members of the Yale community supported the Amistad captives as activists, teachers, and fundraisers. Professor Josiah Gibbs, a language teacher at the university, found an African sailor who could translate for the Mende. Students later helped the Africans learn English and understand Christianity. The students became lobbyists and friends. Young men studying at Yale gained their own church in 1757 when President Thomas Clapp decided they needed their own congregation. Previously, they worshipped at Center Church. Construction on the Battelle Chapel building began in 1874 and was completed in 1876. It is named in honor of Joseph Battelle, who donated funds for a college chapel in 1863 and whose family contributed to the chapel's maintenance and improvement. The chapel design was chosen by competition in 1866. It is a campus Civil War memorial and commemorates the university's involvement in the Amistad struggle on the Freedom Trail.
The next sign on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the New Haven Colony Historical Society in New Haven.
The efforts of Reverend Bacon, Simeon Jocelyn, and their abolitionist colleagues were strengthened by Jocelyn's brother Nathaniel, a well-known and prosperous engraver. During the fundraising and propaganda campaigns which helped fund the Mende defense and generate public sympathy, Nathaniel painted a portrait of Cinque which showed the humanity of the Mende captives. This portrait is in the collection of the New Haven Colony Historical Society, along with other speeches, documents, letters, illustrations, and newspaper articles related to the Amistad trial and slavery in New Haven County.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Grove Street Cemetery in New Haven.
In 1796, the Grove Street Cemetery opened to replace the old burial ground, which had been located on the New Haven Green. Distinguished New Haven residents, Yale affiliates, and several abolitionist activists are buried here. Dr. C. Van Rensselaer Creed, a 19th century New Haven African-American physician and civil rights activist, is buried in a family plot at Grove Street Cemetery. His professional medical career began in the Civil War period, making him an important cultural and political figure in a post-slavery African America. Buried nearby is Yehudi Ashman, an early agent of the African Colonization Society. Also buried here is Josiah Willard Gibbs, Reverend Leonard Bacon, Roger Sherman Baldwin, and Nathaniel Jocelyn.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Prince Hall Masonic Temple in New Haven.
The Gough Street Special School was built in 1864 through the efforts of community leaders, generous benefactors, and the local school board. It replaced an earlier black-run school known as the Gough Street School. This school opened the following year as the new Gough Street School with seats for 143 and a commitment from the city to compensate for previous inadequacies in public education. African American parents sent their children to this school in such numbers that the old Gough Street School had to be reopened as a facility for younger children. Once city leaders realized the significance of supporting education for African Americans, they soon began to question segregated facilities too. An attempt to integrate public schools led to the closing of the Carlisle School in 1870, and 4 years later, the New Haven Board of Education closed the new Gough Street structure. As the city's last separate school, it could not exclude whites, but had been chartered only for blacks. After the school closed, members of the board stated,
"The result of the war changed, and who will say unfairly or unjustly, the entire relation of the people of color to the state and to its other inhabitants. It made them citizens. It opened to them all the offices of honor and emolument. It destroyed color. All were to be Americans alike, whatever their descent. Each was eligible to any of the state offices, from the lowest to the highest. By law, no discrimination could be made in the schools of Connecticut on account of race or color."
The Gough Street building continued to be an important meeting place for New Haven's black organizations. In 1929, the Grand Lodge of the Prince Hall Masons of Connecticut purchased the building, and today it is the home of a local Black Masons chapter, New Haven's Widow's Son Lodge Number 1.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Dixwell Avenue United Church of Christ in New Haven.
Simeon Jocelyn, that faithful social reformer, began leading religious services for African Americans at his home in 1820. 4 years later, he joined Byers Stanley, William Lanson, and other Black community leaders to found the African Ecclesiastical Society, which would soon meet on Temple Street between George and Crown. A year later, the congregation had 100 members. By August of 1829, the Western Association of New Haven County accepted the church on Temple Street as a congregational church. The Reverend James Pennington, a former slave preparing to be tested for his preaching license, led the church from 1834 to 1839. After auditing courses at Yale Divinity School, Pennington received his license and left for Hartford. The Reverend Amos Beeman succeeded Pennington in 1841. During his tenure at the church, Beeman built a large and committed congregation. Connecticut's Black churches became centers of the struggle for equal rights. In 1847, Reverend Amos Beeman, Reverend James Pennington, then of Hartford's Talcott Street Church, and others, appealed to voters to remove the word white from the Connecticut Constitution, which would allow blacks to vote.
We are your fellow citizens, native-born, and with you we must live and die. You have an interest, then, whether you feel it or not, in our welfare, in our being intelligent, virtuous, and good citizens. We cannot be ignorant, vicious, and degraded without an injury to yourselves. But the surest way to degrade us is to disfranchise us. The most direct way to make us bad citizens is to treat us as aliens. We do not wish to be pointed at as a degraded class in the community. Neither do we believe that the color of the skin is any indication either of virtue, wisdom, or justice. But we regard it as a physical manifestation for which an all-wise creator is alone responsible.
The Temple Street Church's continued growth led the congregation to move to a building in the Dixwell neighborhood in 1896. The church, by then known as Dixwell Avenue Congregational, built its current structure in 1968.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Hannah Gray Home in New Haven.
Hiram Wilson was a missionary who worked with fugitive slaves in St. Catharines, Canada. On March 22, 1853, he wrote this letter to his friend and colleague, Hannah Gray, a laundress and seamstress in New Haven.
My dear sister in Christ, we have had a glorious revival of religion the past winter among the colored people of St. Catharines. It commenced about the beginning of the present year. Among the first fruit of the work was the hopeful conversion of Mary Elizabeth, the girl you saw in my family, but recently from New Orleans. You are not ignorant of her history. Since she has been with us, she has been well instructed, has learned to read and write, and what is best of all, has learned to sing the song of redeeming love. I have a suggestion to make, which may not be deemed unreasonable. You will please think of it. Inasmuch as our means of subsistence in prosecuting the work of human redemption and enlightenment is voluntary, if you will, the kindness to show this letter to some of the friends of our cause in New Haven and raise and send a few dollars, it will be gratefully received and duly acknowledged. I have frequent occasion to administer to the necessities of poor strangers from the prison house of slavery. May God speed the time when blood-guilty oppression shall cease, and the poor panting fugitive no longer be under the necessity of coming to Canada for freedom. My kind regard to all my good friends in New Haven and vicinity. Yours truly in the gospel of love in Christ, Hiram Wilson.
Local abolitionists appreciated Gray's faith and dedication to the anti-slavery efforts. In her will, she left her small house at 158 Dixwell Avenue as a home for indigent colored females. When she died in 1861, several friends lived in the house. Because the will did not provide funds to maintain the home, George Crawford, who would be the first African-American Corporation Counsel for New Haven, had the home designated a charitable institution in 1904. The Women's 20th Century Club, a black women's cultural organization founded in 1900, accepted the maintenance of the Hannah Gray home until it became a community chest organization. In 1911, the sound guidance of the trustees enabled the sale of the original house and a move to the current site at 235 Dixwell Avenue.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Varick AME Zion Church in New Haven.
In October of 1915, William H. Jackson heard the educator and activist Booker T. Washington give what would be the final public address of his life. The ailing Washington spoke to the American Missionary Association and National Council of Congregational Churches at Yale, and later that day, he spoke to Black New Haven at the Varick African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church.
Dear Mr. Washington, you advised me to write you, and you would send me another one of your books, the latest written. I am now writing for that book and any other message that you may have which you care to send. I want to say that I had the pleasure of hearing your address in Woolsey Hall, October 25, past, and I also heard you speak in the AMEZ Church that same night and enjoyed them both immensely. Eloquent as your address was at Woolsey Hall, I enjoyed your heart-to-heart talk at Zion Church more. Why? Because you were among your own people, and you could appeal direct to them in a confidential manner, even better than you could in great meetings such as Woolsey Hall and Carnegie Hall in New York. I am sincere when I say that by your speech in Zion Church, you have arose an awakening in New Haven such as colored people in this vicinity has ever had before. And it was these words largely that did it. You say that you are criticized for preaching industrial education, and right here in New Haven, the center of intelligence, where there is higher education in front of one, higher education in back of one, on the side, etc. In fact, it is almost impossible to escape learning here. You pressed home the results of your many years' work in those few words, sir. It was the home run stroke which won the game when the score was a tie. For fear of fatiguing you by farther discourse, I close, hoping to hear from you soon. Sincerely yours, William H. Jackson, November 1, 1915.
Nearly a century before Washington's address, a group of black worshippers left the local Methodist church to begin Varick. In 1820, the church affiliated with the Zionist church movement of James Varick, who challenged white Methodists' reluctance to ordain African Americans. The congregation built its home at 242 Dixwell Avenue in 1908, and it is here that Washington spoke.
Thank you.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Trowbridge Square Historic District in New Haven.
Trowbridge Square was an early attempt at racially mixed affordable housing. The intersection of Portsea Street, Carlisle Street, Cedar Street, and Salem Street is the center of the original neighborhood. Simeon Jocelyn found inspiration in the teachings of the Calvinist reformer Charles G. Finney. Many in New England accepted the lessons of the early 19th century's Great Revival and set out to improve their communities. After helping to establish a church for African Americans, Jocelyn then accepted the earthly challenges of housing and education. Public opinion defeated his 1831 proposal for a manual college for black students. Soon after, he joined architect and builder Isaac Thompson to develop an early example of affordable housing in the Mount Pleasant neighborhood. This area is now known as Trowbridge Square in recognition of the New Haven merchant family that managed the neighborhood after Jocelyn. Jocelyn and Thompson's plan resembled the Nine Squares design of New Haven and even included a central square, now a park, to represent the green. Its original boundaries were the nine squares surrounded by Columbus Avenue, Liberty Street, Putnam Street, and Howard Avenue. Thompson and Jocelyn hoped the area would be a model integrated community for working people in the city. To improve the quality of life, restrictive covenants encouraged abstinence from alcohol and racist behavior. In 1834, they added a school with special provisions for African-American education. The Spireworth, or Mount Pleasant School, as it had been called, burned in 1859. Residents named the new structure the Carlisle Street School.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Long Wharf in New Haven.
In 1850, William Lanson wrote a statement of facts addressed to the public.
I feel it my duty to notify the public of my prosperity in life during the first 40 years that I spent in this town. I hope to be excused, as I can only give a small hint of my meaning in trying to show what I have done in this place. The actual labor and materials that went through my hands in building large jobs of stone work would amount to about $400,000. I built the biggest part of the East Haven Bridge and the steamboat wharfs, and most of all the wharfs and slips up to the head of Long Wharf, as well as repairing the Long Wharf.
Long Wharf became an important port for 19th century New Haven in a period before the steamship changed the shipping of goods in the United States. William Lanson, an African-American contractor and builder, built the final section of the wharf when other builders believed it was hopeless. Between 1810 and 1811, he built the final 1,500 feet with stone he quarried. His use of stone distinguished his section from the part built with wood and dirt. Lanson's success also represents African-American participation in shipping with such varied roles as sailors, cargo, and dock workers during the period. Future plans call for a life-size working replica of the Amistad ship, which will present the history of the trial and the role of African-Americans in shipping to be docked at Long Wharf.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Sachem Country House in Guilford.
Haven, always a transportation hub, was an important junction on the Underground Railroad, that network of abolitionists who hid and housed escaped slaves on the road to freedom. Four routes ran northward through Connecticut at Stamford, New Haven, or Old Lyme, and traveled on to Farmington, the Grand Central Station of the Underground Railroad in Connecticut. From there, they headed north to Westfield or Springfield, Massachusetts. Some came up the Connecticut River from Middletown to Hartford to Springfield. An eastern Connecticut route ran from New London to Norwich and Putnam to Worcester, Massachusetts. A western Connecticut route included Waterbury, New Milford, Washington, Tarrington, Winchester, and Winstead. From New Haven, a passenger could choose a route headed north, northeast, or east, depending upon safety and circumstances. The route east, towards Deep River and Chester, had a stop in Guildford at the Sachem Country House built in 1792 by James Davis, Jr. Amos Bartlett moved his family to this house in the summer of 1816. 5 years later, a cousin, George Bartlett, married into the family, and as the Bartlett clan grew, he made substantial additions to the house. With his enlarged living quarters, Bartlett used space in the cellar to hide up to 8 escaped slaves at a time. Once they had eaten and rested, they met a connection from Old Saybrook who guided the fugitives through the next step of their journey to freedom.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Milford Cemetery in Milford.
Throughout the state, there are hidden histories that, once found, reveal the significance of African American participation in the development of America. Most of these stories will never be known. But Milford citizens found and honored 6 black patriots who fought in the American Revolution. In the town cemetery, there is a monument to Revolutionary War prisoners abandoned by the British. These prisoners were sick with smallpox, which was often fatal. Town leaders decided Milford should care for the soldiers, and they were kept in private homes until town hall could be opened as a temporary hospital. The memorial recognizes the efforts of the townspeople and the service of the soldiers. In 1852, the town placed a Portland brownstone monument to the dead over their grave. 6 African Americans, Job Caesar, Pomp Cyrus, Juba Freeman, Peter Gibbs, William Sauer, and Congo Zado are listed on the monument in the cemetery.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is First Baptist Church in Milford.
Until the end of the 19th century, African Americans who lived in Milford worshipped in New Haven. In 1893, members of Emmanuel Baptist Church in New Haven started the First Baptist Church of Milford. By 1900, the church was ready for a move into the North Street location. In the year of this nation's bicentennial celebration, Milford's First Baptist Church acknowledged and claimed the 6 African American soldiers with a memorial plaque on a stone in front of the church.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Nero Hawley's grave in Trumbull.
Nero Hawley was a slave in the household of Daniel Hawley in what was then called North Stratford. The Hawley family operated a sawmill, a gristmill, and a cider mill, and Nero probably became familiar with each of these. In 1777, the 36-year-old Nero joined the Continental Army to support the colonies in the American Revolution. For his service at Valley Forge, he was paid $6.67 monthly, rations consisting of 1 pound of beef or pork, 1 pound of bread or flour a day, a small serving of vegetables when available, 4 ounces of rum or whiskey a day, a bit of vinegar, salt, soap, and a few candles a week. He served 4 years, and in 1781, Nero returned to his wife and family in North Stratford. The following year, he received the papers confirming his freedom as a veteran of the Revolutionary War. In the years after the war, he built his family a home, and with his savings and knowledge from the mills, Nero invested in local woodlots and several other business ventures. Through his industry, he obtained the freedom of his family. Nero had legal notice of emancipation for his children entered into the town records.
To all people to whom it may concern, know ye that I, Nero Horley of Trumbull, in the county of Fairfield and state of Connecticut, grant and give to my son, Obadiah Horley, and my 3 daughters, Clary Horley, Sloan Horley, and Dinah Horley, to all of them their freedom to take for themselves this 15th day of August, 1801.
Horley's biography is featured in the book From Valley Forge to Freedom by E. Merrill Beach, which led to the dedication of the headstone. Horley died in 1817 at the age of 75. Daniel Horley's house still stands nearby.
The last site on the southwestern section of the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Walter's AME Zion Church in Bridgeport.
Bridgeport's Little Liberia was an African-American settlement on the southern edge of the city and bounded by the harbor. In the 1830s, the Whiting family, supporters of the Fairfield County Anti-Slavery Society, began to sell lots to blacks. Eventually, former slaves, free blacks from other parts of Connecticut, and migrants from the South and the Caribbean had formed a neighborhood. They maintained a local school and supported 2 churches. That early community of faith led to Walter's African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. The church had been at 423 Broad Street since 1882. After a fire destroyed the original structure in 1951, the current building was erected on the surviving foundation. In 1925, the poet Langston Hughes published an untitled poem in the Harlem Mecca for the New Negro edition of Survey Graphic.
We have tomorrow bright before us like a flame. Yesterday a night gone thing, a sundown name. And dawn today, broad arch above the road we came. We march.
From Nero Horley's Battle for Freedom to the dedication of Ed Hamilton's Amistad Memorial, African Americans in the southwestern region of the Nutmeg State have been leaders in the fight for racial equality. The contributions of the Jocelyns, Bartletts, and Bacons remind us that interracial cooperation was often present on that march. African Americans supported an independent network of churches, schools, service organizations, and neighborhoods, and simultaneously strengthened the state through their labor, cultural contributions, and challenges to the status quo. The Freedom Trail commemorates these sacrifices and victories as it promises that current challenges and sacrifices will lead to future victories. We have tomorrow.
This concludes your tour of the southwestern section of the Connecticut Freedom Trail.